Listen up, Umi. This is a podcast with the most Tucker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Available All Souls Podcast, joined by Adam Camilleri.
Howdy, everybody.
And Tanya Gates.
Hey, how's it going?
Welcome to the show. It's going to be a cool month. There's all going to be all kind of stuff to talk about. Believe me, before we hit October, unfortunately, we don't have that to talk about right now. But you got to trust me on this one. It's going to be some cool stuff. I know people are going to be excited about it. And Adam, you went to a Horus Heresy tournament this past weekend.
I did. I played at my first ever Heresy event. It was a freaking amazing time. It was a 40K event that me and some of my mates started. I think it was in the first year of 8th edition. And some of those gens, well, that hobby group, you know, some people, they prefer a more stable, you know, environment. One set of rules, one book that doesn't change. And mostly these guys are very much hobby focused. And so the Horus Heresy really appeals to them as being like, you know, they can spend a week on a Marine kind of thing in a tactical squad. And I'm lucky enough that some of my crew have won Golden Demons and various other painting awards and essentially told me everything I knew with my shabby skills. But they transitioned that event even to a Horus Heresy event a couple of years ago, and I was able to make it to the first one of those. And man, it was a great freaking time. I gotta say, Heresy is a lot of fun, and I think it's the natural for anybody who played in like 4th, 5th, 6th edition, where we had those big elements of hobby, of sports, of, you know, and then of generalship all combined. I think Horus Heresy is the natural evolution of what we loved about that style of gaming. And I think it's a beautiful, not even a holdover, it's still pushing the envelope on the tabletop and on the rules. And, you know, and as we know, there are so many new paints and techniques, and the level of hobby is just, you drool over it.
Now, I do see, like, on Twitter and Instagram and everything, I see, you know, cool pictures of people posting their units for Horus Heresy. But are you finding, like, on average that people are investing that time into those armies and stuff?
Absolutely, man. So let me put it like this. I am in the 40K community in my state of Victoria, I'm above average. I'm not up with the best, but I'm above average painting the level of hobby that I usually aspire to. I go to a Horus Heresy event, I'm probably bottom five. the standard that people just put in just naturally because they love it, because they like to, is just so high. It's really incredible what people do in those realms. And it's on that blank canvas of that generic Space Marine chassis, body, you know, whatever mark of armor it may be, but people just push the envelope so much. Like the meanest of us is, you know, weathered, streaked, two level highlights and or pre-shaded, airbrushed, decaled, varnished, all these things, like pin washed. It's incredible to see, an absolute testament to their efforts. But there are just some dudes that just absolute freaks as well. You look at the stuff that they paint, you're like, why? Because what's really funny is, so I played Dark Angels, and there was two other Dark Angels players there, and I look at one of the other guys, he's painted his Dark Angels, and I just feel just like, well, thanks, mate, because I don't want to paint Dark Angels anymore, because your stuff just looks so much better than mine. And actually, yes, I'm going to stay playing Dark Angels, but you know what I mean? You look at his stuff, and you're like, why didn't I do that with my guys?
I do want to hear about the tournament and the results and like what's doing well, but that new model they just previewed, like the console looks so just beef.
Oh, tough.
Yes.
Yeah, I can't wait for the new, is it the new Mark III's, yeah? I can't wait for them to come out. I'm going to be getting probably 40 of them for various things. Yeah, I got plans.
Yeah, nice. I get here. So what did you take? Like, I know you said Dark Angels, but like what style of list?
Oh, mate, I took Caliber Knight Trader Dark Angels. I've got a little Luther stand-in who I play as a Delegatus, which is essentially a captain upgrade, if you were to speak in 40K terms. And he lets you take essentially a Rite of War, which you could call a specialist detachment. And I took the Stormwing detachment, Stormwing Rite of War, which means I get to put essentially every tactical squad or a battle line unit to I'm going to keep doing all these 40K comparisons, people can get a frame of reference what I'm talking about, but every one of those needs to be a max size squad. So that means I need to have 20 man tactical squads, but then each one gets to have a specific upgrade that doesn't take up a force organization slot, because they still use like a CAD force org system, and then that guy gives that unit stubborn. And so I had a bunch of, I had two big bricks of 20 Traitor, you know, one green shoulder pad tactical Marines. And then I had a Derridaeo Dreadnought, some Rapier batteries with the Thud Guns, a single Contemptor Dreadnought, and then a couple of units in Rhinos, one of which was my favorite unit, but also the easily the worst unit in my army, which is a Volkite support squad with Volkite charges. They do one half of nothing, and I love them dearly and probably will never not take them.
Fair enough. What's the point value that y'all are playing at? Because I know Horus Heresy typically, you know, has a higher point value.
Yes. So this one, so Victoria, the state that I live in, has usually in years gone by when everyone was mostly playing 40K in the 6th and 7th edition and whatnot, we'd had this beautiful step-up system where there was an event at the start of the year that was 500 points, then another one that was 750, then another one was usually 1250, then another one that was 1500, then 2000. This event that we preferred enemy that I used to play in Ryan was always at the 2000 points level, as in like it was towards the end of the calendar year. And so, you know, people who want to build and start a new army could, you know, build it up throughout the year through like four or five events. And so they're stuck at 2000 points, which is on the smaller side for Horus Heresy. Usually, like you said, we usually play about 2,000-3,000 points, which is kind of the points level you get to where you can justify bringing a Primarch.
Yeah, you have a Primarch or a Titan or some kind of big tank or something is
Exactly right.
prime.
You get to have your big toys. You get to bring your big opulent Legion coolness, your glaives, your Fellblades, your Mastodonuses, etc. But yeah, we played the 2,000 points for this one. And yeah, it was enough that you still got some very flavorful options. But it was interesting that they're just like in 40K, I suppose even more in 40K these days, people found that they didn't have enough what we call line. So the only, you remember, you used to have OBSEC to score a lot of objectives back in the day. You couldn't take an objective unless you have OBSEC. But only troops got OBSEC or, you know, via special means. And now pretty much anything can score anything, which I think is, you know, way more better for the way that 40K is structured. But in Horus Heresy, you have to have essentially the line keyword to be able to score objectives. Anything can stop you scoring in objectives, but if you want to score an objective or a mission, you know, a critical location, you know, capture a point or, you know, a flag or whatever, you have to have the line keyword. And so a lot of people found at 2,000 points, they either had more than they needed or not enough. And I suppose that was the interesting thing to unpack.
What ended up taking it down?
So, of course, Horus Heresy is, well, this Horus Heresy event and many others are almost, they're almost like a team event because they'll make sure, I think we had
You're paired
38
up against
players.
a loyalist versus a traitor, but
It's
in all.
always loyalists versus traitors. Exactly right. And you always hear the roar go up and the cheer go up when you figure out which side won. So even if, like, you know, I'm playing, there's like a traitor Night Lords and a traitor Dark Angels, and we, you know, in the fluff, we hate each other. I'll be high-fiving that guy, being like, "Did you kill some more loyalist scum, mate?" And he'd be like, "Yeah, we did." Wearing their skin right now, I'd be like, "Good stuff. Good for you." where, you know, in the fluff, I'd be, you know, trying to put a sword through his back, like, you know, we did to Conrad. It was a great time. And yeah, so the traitors won this one. The traders got up, which is actually pretty new for what I hear about my region. Apparently, for the last couple of years, the loyalists win more often than not. And so the traders have won the last two. So the pressure's on the loyalists to try and get some W's on the board. So for the last two heresy events. But funnily enough, Dark Angels were the top loyalist, and Dark Angels also the top traders. So that's essentially the best general goes to, you know, the top scorer from each side. So one of the best loyalist top scorer, the best traitor top scorer. And it was Dark Angels for both because first
well,
is in fact best. Thank you very much,
I want
everybody.
to,
We
I
fixed
also
it.
want to get out in front of some of the people that are like, well, of course the Dark Angels are traitors or blah blah blah. So in the Heresy, if you're not familiar with it, every single legion has traitor rules.
Correct. And loyalist rules. Every single one. Yeah. You can play any of them as either or both. It does not matter. There was somebody there with traitor salamanders, which are or and traitor white scars, which are very rare in the fluff but did exist. And then
Well,
there are
that's the
people
thing
there.
is that's not necessarily heralded in the books, you know, at least or made incredibly clear, but every legion had some that turned.
Correct. Correct. And there was loyalist word bearers and Sons of Horus at recent events as well. And, you know, in the fluff, they're both supported and not supported in various ways. The fact is that the Horus Heresy was such a vast all-encompassing conflict that you can really do what you want, as long as you're playing in the sandbox of the factions that were there, pretty much.
And I hate to say it, but the Blood Angels also have traitor rules. I know we need to be clear so that everyone did it, and but they're... I don't remember hearing about any traitor Blood Angels.
Mate, we actually... I actually...
so not having an intervention. He's like, listen.
Sit down. Sit down. there's some really cool heresy armies that you could do for not quite traitor Blood Angels. If you want to do them thematically, there will kind of be two options that spring to mind. So there's a new fluff that's come in out of the recent Siege of Terror books about the Revenant Legion, which is kind of what the Blood Angels were before the Sanguinius was found, which is just that stuff sparks such imagery. Were they gray? Were they like a dark or a dull gray or silver?
Seems reasonable.
Anyway, so that's what they were. That's what they were before, and it was really they were kind of messed up. Like they had some pretty. I won't delve into it because they're a PG show, and also I don't want to do any spoilers. But they were pretty messed up as far as legions went. People would look at them and be like, "Why are you guys wrong?" And so you could do that legion, that portion. Like there was an expeditionary fleet out on the fringes in the Ghoul Stars or something that wasn't, you know, didn't get to come back or was lost in time, didn't get to come back during the crusade, and they've come back to the heresy and been like, well, this is all messed up, we're just going to do our own thing and continue on our journey and just fight the people who fight us.
Fight who needs to be fought.
Yeah, exactly. We're just going to fight whoever fights us, and you know, they're probably everybody. So
the fact the heresy existed, and the fact that I'm fascinated by that period of time, as most Marine players and Warhammer fans are, is that Luna Wolves is my counts as Marine chapter, and I built them all to be marks of armor appropriate for the time period, so I can play them in Warhammer 40K or in Horus Heresy. But of course, you know, Primaris throw that out of whack.
Yeah, so that is fair.
Put that aside. But all my Blood Angel models before Primaris were also in Mark 6 or below armor, and I also play Custodes. Like, I have a Custodes force just to get double duty out of it.
Yeah, excellent. And there are so many options therein. I mean, I love the idea of the Lunar Wolves, because you can just do, they can just be whatever you want. Yeah, really cool. Custodes also...
love painting them, the white, black, the white armor and black armor, you know, and then you mix them up however you want, because that's what Horus did, and nobody can tell you you're wrong.
Correct. Well, I'm of the opinion that Heresy, no one can tell you you're wrong anyway. Which is always good, you know. Do with it as you will. But most people choose their legion, or you know, people are playing Heresy because they're fallen in love with a character, a battle, a series of books. There's some place in time that has captured their imagination, and they're doing whatever they got to do to represent that on the table to the best of their ability. And I find that just so inspiring and passion inducing, and yeah, thoroughly awesome.
That's good to hear. Now, I don't know how many players were there.
I think we had 38 on the day, 16 to 16.
Yeah. Oh, pretty good.
No, 18 and 18. Yeah, 18 and 18. Yeah.
Can we change gears and talk a little bit about 40K?
I guess.
Never mind. I was going to say a line that I couldn't say on the show, and I was like,
we're talking about tournaments, and this past weekend, you know, a lot of tournaments is probably the weekend that folks were starting to adopt the new data slate.
Correct.
And so we've seen some changes as to what is kind of winning. I don't know if we've seen, you know, mass changes in what people are taking just yet, but we definitely saw some shakeups, you know, to what's winning the last couple of weeks.
Well, dude, Votann and Death Guard coming from the bottom to getting top places. I can't remember if both of them got a first place at a two-dayer, but I think Votann absolutely did at a small.
And we're talking worldwide, so this we're highlighting a couple of examples from things that have happened around the world. But we look at that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. On another show, you and I delve very deep into that stuff. But when we had a 90 player event where the top 10 was 10 different factions, that is unfreaking heard of in 10th edition so far, and hopefully heralds, you know, the beginning of a much more diverse and interesting meta.
I mean, we can't tell at this very, very moment in time if just some of the players that were playing Eldari moved to another faction, and so if it's skewed things or whatever, but we definitely saw a lot of diversity in the fact that Eldari were not just automatically taking the top three spots, or you know, two of the top three spots at many, many events out there. And you know, we were even, you know, kind of candidly talking about, maybe it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but is the game balanced right now?
I mean, too early to call just yet, but for the short term, when things are still in this kind of forming stage, when everyone's got essentially a puncher's chance again, it's extremely good. You could just have the right list on the right day, have the right run, and go all the way. I think that's extremely encouraging.
I think you
Also, we've
might have
had.
mentioned it, is that you believe that the meta is just not solved again yet.
Yes, not solved just yet. I don't even think if you put a gun to my head and said, Adam, what's the top three factions in the game? I would struggle to tell you right now. I could tell you what I believe, but man, I couldn't say it with any certainty. And also, like, there's the whole X factor of having tyrannies injected into things, and they have six different, very distinct ways to play and pivot. And right now, tyranny players are just scratching the surface of what that book can do. So, you mean, who freaking knows in a couple of weeks what we're going to be talking about?
The meta, we talk about it as like a thing, but it really is like a living, breathing organism. And we've already seen lists, things like orcs were on the rise, and I've talked about this before, but the fact they have a largely an anti-monster keyword with what we're seeing, high toughness, like big burly stats that stand up on their own and work really well, but then they also work really well about what will be the first brand new codex into the game, which is Tyranids,
That's
which are that monster
correct. I
keyword.
mean, they've got, I mean, if they play little bugs, you just take more boys and you've got the right number of attacks to get through it. They take big bugs and you've got Beast Snagger boys, Beast Hog boys, all those different keyword stuff as well. And then you just have a bunch of transports if you just want to pull that lever instead. So, yeah, it seems to be a lot of options out there. Also, has anybody tried, have you guys looked hard at the new Iron Jaws models?
Yeah.
There are some options.
Well,
Are
like
you
what?
talking about making mega knobs and things?
All sorts. You just want to make some big boys, some I'm doing using quotation mark. You make some black orcs, big old Iron Jaws boys, some regular knobs, some mega knobs, you want to do a instead of a what are they called? Beast boss on Squigasaur, you can just have big boss on Super Hog. I don't know.
On Big Pig.
Big pig, big pork boy.
Well,
there are options there, and they look so good.
Toughness 10 is no joke.
Australia's no joke. Yeah, it's freaking awesome.
Yeah, I just think that the orcs, stat for stat, pound for pound, destroy all of the kind of smaller Tyranids, and so the screens just basically might as well not exist. And then they play really well into the larger things, like the Norn emissaries, which I don't know if we've seen a bunch of them yet. I think they're pretty good as far as like what they can accomplish on the tabletop, what they kind of force your opponent into trying to stat check. But I don't know if we're seeing them just yet, and then maybe that's a model availability thing with
Yeah,
Hobby
could be.
Lobby.
Yep.
But we'll see.
Also, yeah, exactly right. Also, it's a big model, and people want to take their time with them and not just feel like they need to push them right out.
I don't know, it's kind of hard not to want to get a big new shiny model on the table. I mean, it's going to get
Yeah,
picked up
sure.
immediately because that's the curse of the new model when it gets put on the table. But anyway, but going back to the fact that the meta being the living, breathing, thing that is changing, I wonder if, with the changes to Eldari, with point hikes and changes to devastating wounds, which I know that's not an Eldari rule, but it certainly feels like it, with as much as they can pump out, is that enough to let this new thing rise? And then how do the current list deal with Tyranids, which are the brand new codex, and then what we believe to be, or I should, sorry, we I think that, like, what would be a natural predator of the Tyranids is the orcs, and we're going to see maybe more of them in the field. How does that change the other stuff?
Yeah, so there's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of people reevaluating their choices as well. So it used to be that people would only have a couple of very simple questions if they were trying to build. We're talking as filthy meta chasers right now. If they were trying to build a competitive list to take to a GT or a major or a big old tournament, they'd be like, okay, how do I not auto lose to a Wraith Knight and not auto lose to GSC shenanigans? Acolytes with demo charges and or just a bunch of neophytes. How do I combat those things? Well, it's like the heads of the Hydra. Those two or three things have been knocked off, and like four or five of them have taken their place. Now it is a lot of the time for a lot of people, it is how do I try and kill 20 Necron Warriors in a single activation, or neuter their effects on the table through other means, Battle Shock, etc., or move mitigations, just keeping them a neg two or can't advance and stuff. How do I contend with the new hotness in a phenomenal amount of possible lone operatives coming out of both Space Marines with their currently still in the game sniper units, you know, Phobos Libbies, lieutenants with combi weapons, and then all the crazy amount of lone op coming out of all the Neurolictors and Death Leaper and stuff in the Vanguard Onslaught Detachment for Tyranids, which could be another big hurdle that people need to take into account. And then we've still got Knights in the meta. We've still got, like, and the proliferation of small Knights, and I'm talking mostly about Chaos Knights right now because I think we're still on the drawing board for Imperial Knights and seeing what comes out there. But the little Knights are going to be everywhere for Chaos Knights, and they're extremely prohibitive, especially with the rebalance to Battleshock coming back in. And then we're about to have a Space Marine Codex. Who knows what's going to happen there? It's probably, you know, could be a month away still, but still got a lot of time to figure out things for the Space Marines before they get hit with the brand new injection of, you know, models, rules, detachments, etc. And that doesn't even take into account the two you've mentioned as well with the Orcs. In addition, we still have some very powerful proponents from Chaos Space Marines, which are on the rise. And I think if you were going to look at, because it used to be you had to be able to survive the damage checks of Eldari and the damage checks of Gene Steel Cults. There were two things that were, if you didn't prepare for them, could just table you in, you know, T-minus three turns or less. The ones that could do it now, Chaos Space Marines, they seem to be the army with the biggest single punch damage output from Obliterators and Forge Fiends, and now, you know, possibly still Terminators. Yeah, baby. Yeah, absolutely. And great stratagems, like the Nurgle stratagem for Reol's Hits and Wounds, and the Undivided stratagem. And the Nurgle strat's the You Cannot Shoot Me strat. But, they're the ones, if you wanted to look at it, like, if you wanted to see if your army's durable, look to the Chaos Space Marine damage profiles. They seem to be around about the best in the game at the moment for the single punch damage, and just be like, can I survive this, and or, you know, do I have strats and buffs and mitigations to in order to not get shot and not get brutalized possibly? And if you can answer, you know, I did just reel off like seven things, but take as many of those into account as you can when you're building your list, and or just have them cognizant when you're thinking about the list you might play against, and have a plan.
That we were talking about how to survive in the Eldari world, which was, you know, how can you afford to sacrifice your units to score points? And I think the fact that they existed led people to taking more units that could, or let me say this a different way. Having that exist made generals start to reevaluate how they're playing the game. Like, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to actually remove models from across the table, which is could be problematic? Or are they just, you know, planning on being places and scoring? And you were talking about lone operative and stuff like that before. And that's one of the more powerful and somewhat still kind of rare keywords for a bunch of units in the game that prevents them from being shot, which could make that they kind of immune while they are performing that scoring function in some cases.
Well, it seems like there's the lists that have absolutely freaking heaps of it, and then there are some that have very little. Of course, when I was just reeling off those five or six things, I did not mention Death Guard. I did not mention World Eaters. Did not mention Votan. That's simply because I can't tell you what you need to worry about them yet, because I don't know. But they're all looking a lot stronger
at this point. Back to the drawing
exactly
board.
Right.
Links of Votan, yeah, we saw them place incredibly highly at a couple of 50 plus player tournaments over the weekend. They were not on the radar at all before the days.
Exactly right. So I can't tell you what to worry about there, because I don't know yet. I haven't seen it. But yeah, there it's a whole brave new world out there. Custodes is another one I didn't mention. You both play Custodes, yeah? In some fashion.
A little bit. I dabbled.
I'm trying to get a bead on how, because they were one of the best factions in the game. I'm trying to figure out how significant the hits were, if they were significant.
Are we talking about the squad size changes and some point adjustments?
Yeah, I haven't played since the balanced data slate came down, so I'm not sure.
Not totally fair. Yeah, like I said, I haven't played into them since then either, so I can't speak to it regardless.
We do know they did not make a lot of podiums this past week, at least in the ones that we were looking at. But I don't know that that's indicative of saying that one thing happened or another. Especially at tournaments where people are, some of them are kind of malleable about what they will play. And so if they feel like there's any resistance to what they were playing before, maybe something does not give them what they consider the sure thing for more wins than losses, they'll go to another list.
I have a theory about that, actually, because I feel like a lot of people have a Custodes army as like a secondary army. Because sometimes they are very good and you don't need to paint a lot of models in order to actually get them on the table. So maybe a lot of those people who it's their secondary faction, they felt with the balanced data slate that their primary faction just got so much better. So it was time to go back to that.
That's fair. I mean, I only know maybe two people who play Custodes as their main, as their ride or die. I mean, I just mentioned that both of you have Custodes armies.
But I'm a dabbler as well with the Custodes. Like I have enough to play, you know, a game with Custodes. That is not the army that I chase them in with.
So in a drawer behind me in the many tiers of my pile of shame, I have a Custodes army. it's mostly unbuilt.
They look cool.
Your statement is in fact correct, Tanya.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think about all the people I know who play, and maybe one person in my sort of sphere of influence, maybe one person is actually like a Custodes main.
Yeah.
And there's dozens of people who have Custodes armies. Yeah.
So how I got a Custodes army is that I essentially won a door prize of a pack of Custodian Guard. And then a couple of weeks later, a mate wanted to trade me something for two packs of three Necron Wraiths. And I asked him what he had, and he said, oh, I got some Custodes. Like, yeah, sure, just trade me those. And then I was like, well, I've got like 3/4 of an army because I now have 3 boxes of Custodes. So I just bought like 2 more boxes of Custodes and I got a whole army. And there you go. That's how everyone, you know, kind of just accumulates an army of these guys. And I find that so, what is funny about that is like, it's the opposite of their fluff. Like they're so rare and sought after and, you know, almost rarely seen. And then you ask any old Imperium player, and they're like, yeah, sure. I got like 4,000 points.
I do like the fact that Double Duty, now what a Horus Heresy, like if you're fine-tuning it, list won't look like a 40K list.
The
units that you will take.
Well, I did play Custodes in my Horus Heresy run. In the 5 games that I played, and it was the first time I played Custodes in Horus Heresy, and they are savage. Like if they touch you, you are going down. Like they are so brutal in combat. But yeah, there are some differences. Like the Alaris Terminators are not the same as the Terminators they had in 30K. They had the Quillen Terminators in 30K. But so while it might not always be the same that your 40K models can be played in 30K, all of the 30K models, the Horus Heresy models, can be played in 40K. So there is at least one way is purely 100%. The doors are open. If you find those profiles and data sheets viable, that's up to your discretion. But that is nice. That like demons, you know. But demons are 100%, you know, double duty and even triple duty actually. But a lot of the new demon models don't yet have rules in Horus Heresy. Like there's rules for very rudimentary demons, which I think is really cool. But apparently that's going to be expanded upon at some point.
There we go. Hey, well, that's part one of the show. I want to kind of illustrate that tournaments are happening on for all kind of stuff out there. Horus Heresy, Blood Bowl, 40K.
I have a question. I have a question to the group.
Okay.
How much time on average would you spend painting a squad of 5, whatever your main army is? I'm just trying to get a bead on, because I at that Horus Heresy event, I was asking people this question. Maybe this is something that people can ask themselves, because for the level and the proficiency that was on display, I was expecting people to say, oh, I spend like, you know, 30 hours, 40 hours on these 5 guys. And they weren't. They were telling me about tips and tricks and hacks that they've got that have over the years brought the time down to minuscule levels. And but then when I was, you know, when I was first starting out the game before kind of airbrushes were prolific, before a lot of these tricks and trades and contrast paints and dips and all these things were phenomenal hobby products were, you know, prevalent. People would spend that long on a tax squad. Just a basic tax squad would take them like a month to do 10 guys because everybody would need to be pin washed, double highlighted, layered, etc.
For that, no, I'm not claiming to be amazing by any stretch, but for that, including like decals, I'd say about 3 days of hobby time, whatever I can set around and do for, you know, but three sit downs for a squad of five?
Three sessions. And so on average, like how many hours would each of those be?
I mean, I'd probably say two.
Yeah, so about 6 hours, but say 6 to 8 hours.
Yeah, something like that. But that, in that, yeah, maybe that's undershooting it a bit, but yeah.
Mm. What about yourself, Tanya? And feel free if you've got,
gosh,
you know, it's this long for orcs, it's this long for this, it's this long for that.
Yeah. Yeah, so like my Night Haunt are like my fast army. So I can paint 10 guys in like, it's still going to be like 6 hours. Mm-hmm. But all of my other armies are pretty like labor intensive. If I was going to do like five ogres would probably take me like 20 hours if they're just like lead belchers or something that doesn't have a lot going on. My orcs take a lot of glazing to do their skin, so they're going to be like, the skin alone on 10 of them is going to be like, I don't know, 12 hours just for the skin. So it varies widely for me.
Yeah, I suppose that's taking into account. I mean, ogres, like five ogres is the equivalent of like almost 20 of some like 20 skaven, you know. Bigger models, you need to put in a bit more effort. But it's funny the examples you use. So you used, I mean, essentially the orcs are like the MEQ equivalent, like the orcs are the same size as the Space Marine, and they were the one that taking the longest. The smaller models.
But here's the thing. They have so much going on, right? So they've got a bit of armor. They've got some skin. Yeah. They've got cloth, you know, bones and skulls and all this stuff. It's just, it's a lot of different elements that go into it. Whereas the Night Haunt, the way I paint my Night Haunt is like, they're a bed sheet, basically.
Yep.
And then they got some metallic stuff on them and like some spooky skin bits. And it's like, done.
Ain't that the truth? They're just a bunch of spicy bed sheets.
That's right.
The Night Haunt.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it varies widely for me. And I don't actually like to keep a timer. I'm not a commission painter, and it's better if I don't know, honestly.
Totally fair. Totally fair. I suppose it's what scheme you've chosen as well. It's a bit too simplistic a question, but I do like to know, because then I like to look at your models and have that in mind when I look at them.
Yeah. Because, like, Paul, you probably should spend another hour on these. That's
No, because I think it's showing more respect to the effort. If you and it shows more artistic. I mean, I think if I had the willingness, the perseverance, and or the time to put X amount of hours into a model, literally as many as it takes to get it to the highest standard I can possibly paint, yeah, I could probably put out some stuff that looks as good as some of the guys that do it in half the time or a third of the time.
But that what all the, like the great painters that I talked to, you know, I was like, what is the secret? Like, well, just a lot of time. Like that's, I just put time into the miniature.
I disagree.
But see, that time is fueled by passion and interest and love. So you can't just manifest it. You just can't be like, I'm going to decide to paint this model forever.
It's not something I can do.
Sorry.
I'm going to be controversial. I think if you want to have an army or a model or something like that just absolutely wow people, and you don't want to spend a lot of time on it, I think pay attention to your color theory, because certain colors are just going to like wow people. Also, people love bright colors. So if you could put like one bright color on it, people will love it. But also, if you don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but you still want people to think it's cool, lean into your mistakes to create your own style.
Yeah.
For me, I don't like to like, how would I put it? I don't like to do a lot of blending, and I don't like to spend a lot of time on every element of a model. Right. So it's like, yeah, I spend a lot of time on my orc skin and it's very bright, but it also allows me to do kind of more drab colors everywhere else and have it still stand out. I don't like to do a lot of wet blending. I am really bad at dry brushing and like all these other techniques that are really really fast. I also am a little bit neurospicy. So like the sound of air through an airbrush is like nails on a chalkboard for me. I can't do it. So I've developed my own style that's kind of cel-shaded. I love the art of the Borderlands franchise for video games. So I kind of just like leaned into that. And is it technically the most amazing thing ever? No, but it's kind of interesting and it draws people's eyes to it.
That's some good tips.
Execution is what I heard there. Good execution.
Your own execution. Mm. Do it your own way. Yeah.
Oh, this is a great talk. A lot of opportunities to get out there and interact with the rest of the world playing the game that we love, or games.
Literally, 10th edition just started for me. Let's go. Let's go.
Do it. All right. Well, if for some reason we don't have a part two, it's been great talking to you all this week, and we'll be back ASAP. I'm actually going to be out of town next week, so there may be a little bit of a break, and then we'll be back at it. See you, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Or not bye. We're not sure. We're not sure yet.
Yeah. Well, just put me in at the end.
Okay.
I said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.